A legal betting site in Europe, oddschecker.com, will let you bet, in euros of course, on who will be the Republican Party's presidential nominee. Today, the odds checker odds that the nominee will be Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker are 3-1, 4-1, 5-2, 6-1, or 7-2. But let's bring that question back home. Wisconsin, I asked two of our scholars, Marquette Law School pollster and Professor Charles Franklin and UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication Professor Mike Wagner, to lay out scenarios under which Scott Walker is and isn't the nominee Republicans choose at their July 2016 convention in Cleveland. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in. What are your impressions on, I don't want to spend a lot of time on oddsmakers or oddschecker.com, but anything surprise you that you can lay down bets in euros on Walker's odds?
I'm not a very good bettor in American currency, let alone in euros, but I think what's striking here, first of all, there's some variation across the checkers, but also if you look at the history of these, his odds have been getting better and better for the last 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And at least at so far, there hasn't been any prolonged downturn in his odds. Instead, there's been a little steady improvement.
Mike, he seems to be listed second after Jeb Bush in terms of the odds. Do you think that's fair?
I think at this point, you know, given what we know about who's probably running and where they stand and how they've been performing in the media and in the polls, that's reasonable at this point. But it's important to keep in mind that, you know, a few years ago, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump, Michelle Bachmann all led polls in the GOP run to 2012. So it's pretty early to be placing any bets.
Yeah, but I just think it's fun. Okay, before we get into the two scenarios, will be and won't be the presidential nominee, let's talk about, in general, about how far Scott Walker has come. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll throw out some polling numbers because I do that.
Yeah, that's for a living.
You know, through the fall and into December and early January, Governor Walker was consistently getting about 4% or 5% or sometimes 6% in state and national polls. And he'd been in that level for months. But then after the Iowa Freedom Summit
yes.
Speech that got so much attention, he zoomed up to being consistently either the front runner in the poll with 18 to 25%, depending on the poll and depending on the state, with Jeb Bush a close second in most of those. And in a few states, Jeb Bush is leading, Scott Walker's a close second. So he's certainly had a really good late January, February, and now into early March.
Mike, do you think it's a surprise to Governor Walker and his campaign advisors that he's doing this well this early?
I imagine it was part of their plan to come out a little bit earlier with how aggressive he's been on the campaign trail as compared to other people who are likely running kind of behind quote-unquote Jeb Bush, the Marco Rubios and Chris Christies and folks like that. And so I think Governor Walker was kind of the first to strike out amongst the top of the second tier and has vaulted himself, at least for the time being, into the first tier. And with the polling numbers going up, as Charles, you know, detailed, he's also been getting a lot of national news media attention, and it's gone from, and Scott Walker's running too, to mm-hmm. this is the front runner, or this is the main challenger for Jeb Bush. And so he's really positioned himself with a segment of the public and the major news media as a force to be reckoned with.
Do you think he has made the missteps that some of the national pundits have said? And if so, how embarrassing? Or when he says that those questions real people don't care
right.
about, does that score with his base?
There are a few different audiences for him to think about. One audience is people who vote in Republican primaries. And by and large, the what have been called missteps probably play pretty well with those folks. And they're happy to say, yeah, this is the liberal media asking gotcha questions. We're happy to see him stand up and push back. On the other hand, a lot of the people who help determine who wins a Republican nomination, party activists, donors, Republican lawmakers, have been much more skeptical of Governor Walker's responses to these kinds of questions. And
for
he has to win them over, too.
Especially.
Right. He has to win these folks over, too, in order to win the nomination.
Okay. Charles MPS?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. One is, you know, here in Wisconsin, we know the governor so well, and virtually everybody has an opinion about him. So it's really surprising to look at the national polls and polls in other states and find that he's actually towards the bottom end of familiarity in most of those states, even among
right.
these Republican voters that Mike's talking about. And so that's been a real plus for him because not very well known, but as he's gotten known, it's been overwhelmingly favorable opinions being formed of him. Even so, he still remains less known than a number of the other candidates. And on the gotcha questions, if you will, I completely agree that the when he first pushed back against national media for what he called gotcha questions, or I'm just not going to play that game, I think it played well with the base and played well with some of the kingmakers, if you will, in the party. But subsequently, the criticism started to come from the conservative press and conservative columnists about being unclear about positions,
maybe not,
and
maybe
more
not
recently
up to
some
school
switches.
Or grounded. It's too cheap and tawdry to say not ready for prime time because the governor is playing in prime time. Isn't it also noteworthy, before we get to the will or won't be, this is a historical period for Wisconsin. We have a sitting governor who's doing very well in the very early rankings for Wisconsin. So he's making history, whatever anybody watching the show thinks of Scott Walker, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal. Our governor, you know, sure looks like he's running for president, and that's going to bring a lot of attention to our state. It's going to bring a lot of attention to a variety of issues that he's had his hand in over the past few years, whether it's things with respect to labor unions and Act 10 or right to work, or you know, his current budget, taxes. All of these kinds of things will be front and center, and his performance in Wisconsin will get scrutiny, just as Bill Clinton's in Arkansas did and George W. Bush's in Texas did.
Yeah, it's actually been a privilege to cover this the last 5 years, apart from, you know, how someone feels, from Act 10 to concealed carry to photo ID to vote and now right to work. Pretty historical era, Charles.
I completely agree. The transition and the kinds of policies the state has and the willingness of a legislature controlled by one party with the same party's governor being willing to make these big changes, these sharp changes, turns from what had been the established rules of the game, is historic no matter what your position is. And it does leave the reason why we need to stick around for another few years
to see
what comes after.
Right. Okay, let's get into the heart of the show. Because he's doing so well now, both of you construct a scenario under which he is the Republican nominee for president. And you can argue it from the calendar, organization, or money. So let's go. Have fun, guys.
Well, I suppose, you know, so if Governor Walker is the Republican nominee, a few other things have happened. Jeb Bush made some errors. He had a couple of unforced errors. Maybe some behavior in his past came out, or messages in the emails he's released embarrass him in some way. And those sorts of things made donors and activists in the Republican Party nervous enough to look around. And when they looked, Governor Walker was there to be the next person in line for those folks. At the same time, Governor Walker would have to perform pretty well, I would say, in the early debates against the other people who are the possible front runner or competitor to Jeb Bush. So Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, you know, those kinds of folks would need to stumble or kind of be vanquished by Walker in some way or another. And then we would need to see, I think, Governor Walker show that he can simultaneously appeal to people who vote in the primary, but pitch himself in such a way that he appears moderate enough to win an election. The history is, the longer your party's in the wilderness from the White House, the more moderate the next person you nominate is. And Governor Walker's not a moderate. And so he has to find a way to position himself as such to people who aren't familiar with him. As Charles points out, lots of people on the Republican side around the country don't know much about him. And that gives him an opportunity to tell him what he wants them to know. And if he can do that effectively while these other things happen, he has an opportunity to be
a quick follow-up before we get to Charles. On Jeb Bush, Mike, do you think, does your scenario assume that Jeb Bush then isn't acceptable on Common Core and immigration to the GOPers that'll pick the next nominee?
That's a possibility. You know, we like to shorthand primary voters as extremists, and a lot of extremists make up the primary voting electorate on both the Republican and Democratic sides, but a fair amount of moderate and or just kind of Republicans but not extreme Republicans also vote. Not as many as there are extremists, but there are enough that a more moderate candidate could be persuasive. And so I don't think that being unacceptable to the party on a couple of high-button issues is enough to prevent him from being the nominee. Mitt Romney was the nominee after all. John McCain was the nominee after all. And so the party will nominate people who aren't orthodox. They might position themselves as more orthodox in the primary at one point or another to convince those voters. But there are enough voters in the Republican Party who aren't, you know, a 7 on a 7-point scale of conservatism to bring someone else besides the most extreme candidate in.
Charles, do you agree that at the moment, which is oh so early, It's the top two are Jeb Bush and Governor Walker.
Well, I would say at the moment that's what the polling shows. Now, you know, this issue about what is the public seeing and responding to versus what are party activists and donors and the sort of professional or quasi-professional elite seeing. And I think you'd have to put Marco Rubio in that top tier based on that second criterion. He hasn't broken out in the polls yet, but his performance in Florida at the Club for Growth meeting a couple of weeks ago was a good example of him presenting himself and getting a very enthusiastic and positive response. You know, there are others in this race as well, but I think those are the ones that seem to rise to the top. You know, with Governor Walker, the scenario in which he wins is that he has established solid credentials with the conservative wing of the party. And even on something like a change on immigration, they're confident enough of his conservative positions on everything else that they cut him a little slack on that one small thing. But every one of these major candidates has some flaws. We've already mentioned Jeb Bush's Common Core and immigration. With Rubio, it was that he was a sponsor of the comprehensive immigration reform. Yes. And then took so much blowback from conservative circles a couple of years ago that he basically withdrew his support of his own bill. So it's not like if we go on to Governor Perry, for example, someone who had a rocky road 4 years ago. So all of these reasonable front runners have some kind of difficulty. And that means every one of them has to overcome the difficulty. Not one of them is Mr. Right with no flaws, no reservations. The one other challenge I would say for Governor Walker is how does he deal with criticism coming from other conservative candidates? He thrives here in Wisconsin in the controversy over Act 10 and other things in the gubernatorial race because he knows how to push back against Democratic critics. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a race in which your criticism has to be directed at Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Bobby Jindal and Rick Perry. And you have to take their incoming complaints and find a way to turn them to your advantage. And so that's going to be one of the fascinating things to watch through the spring and summer as they start to interact with one another. To succeed, Governor Walker needs to find the way to clarify that he is the solid conservative and that each of these others, who are just about as conservative as he is, are more flawed in various ways than he is flawed.
Are you surprised that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has not had a good January and February as Scott Walker has had?
I'm not really. I think the damage that he
Bridgegate?
Got within the party, well, Bridgegate is part of it, but his embrace of Obama, both literally and figuratively,
yes,
in Superstorm Sandy,
really
seems to have done him lasting damage within the party. And he has not found a way to recover from that. If you remember back in 2012, I think it was at the Reagan Library, some lady in the audience begged him to run for president, if I remember the story right. That may have been his moment.
Okay. Let's talk about the calendar. I'm just going to throw out some things, trying to get the impression from you guys. Scott Walker, to get the nomination, will have to do well in caucuses, straw polls, primaries, and debates. So let's walk through some potential calendar options here. The Iowa straw poll, Saturday, August 8th, if you remember, that's the one that Tommy Thompson dropped out of, followed by the January caucuses in Iowa. So how well does Scott Walker have to do to get closer to the nomination in the straw poll and the caucuses in Iowa? Mike, your thought?
Well, you know, I think the straw poll, I think, is less important unless he lays an egg. You know, so if you come in where Tim Pawlenty or Tommy Thompson did, and it's terrible, and the narrative is you've got to win Iowa to do well, as Governor Walker's narrative seems to be shaping up, then, you know, he doesn't need to win it, I don't think, but he needs to not be terrible in comparison to everyone else. But there's a long time between August and January, and so yes, laying the groundwork in Iowa and, you know, doing the hard work of campaigning in all of these counties all over the place and being available to local media and meeting party activists and meeting voters, that's a lot of work that takes place in those several months. And I would say the time between the straw poll and the caucus is really crucial to Governor Walker's chances.
Well, go ahead, Charles.
No, I would agree with that. I think the winners of the Iowa straw poll have rarely become the nominees, but the complete failures at it have often been pushed out after that. The other thing about the straw poll is it may be a slightly different organization of it this year, but in the past, and I expect this year, really it hinges on who can fill up busloads of supporters and drive them to the straw poll to vote for you. Yeah. So that's a big test of financial resources on the one hand and ground game that you can find that many warm bodies to come to the straw poll for you. And this is where Walker's recent staff hires are notable, because he's hired a number of people in Iowa and gotten others on publicly on his team there. So he's building that ground game infrastructure early in the year, not waiting for a while to do it. In contrast, a couple of the other leading candidates have only just hired their first staffer in the state.
Well, let's look past Iowa to the New Hampshire primary on Tuesday, January 26th, followed by the South Carolina primary on February 20th. What strikes me is this is two different regions, Iowa, Northeast, New Hampshire, and then South. What does Governor Walker have to do in the post-Iowa tests to get closer to the nomination?
Again, you don't have to win everything, but you've got to not get shut out, not finish fourth in these places. The difference here is Iowa is a place with a much bigger, more effective conservative Christian voter, religious conservatism, a moral conservatism. New Hampshire has many fewer born-again Christian voters in past exit polls from there. And so the pivot here is between appealing to the more religiously oriented Iowa voters and also appealing to the more economic conservative and somewhat more libertarian New Hampshire voter. New Hampshire a priori ought to be a little more friendly to Jeb Bush, but if you can put the double whammy together and finish first in both of those, that's quite an accelerant to your campaign.
And it would also affect donors and activists. Gee, Jeb lost the first two. So would they say we're going to redouble our efforts, or there's a crisis here and maybe we don't support him anymore?
Mike, do you think Walker's strength, again, the scenario he's going to be the GOP nominee, is how he might do in caucuses or in primaries or in the debates or just the primary elections? Maybe it's an unfair question. Is there anything that you can think more naturally plays that is an asset for him?
Well, I think the one thing to look at is who are people who are endorsing candidates paying attention to? Who are they endorsing? And not the Scott Baios of the world who made an endorsement this week, but politicians, party activists, big donors, who's giving to PACs that support Governor Walker? These are signs of strength that show up before Election Day and are signs of strength that can propel a candidate forward, especially if they do the double whammy and win you know, Iowa and New Hampshire, or win one and place a close second in the other. And so those early races are important, especially for candidates who aren't the anointed 2 years ahead of time frontrunner, and he wasn't. And so if he wins these or plays or performs very well, he's going to have a much better chance than the odds makers would have said, you know, 6 months ago.
Well, again, sticking with the scenario, he'll be the nominee. Has he lined up, or do you see him lining up the big givers that will allow him to stay in the race for a long enough to win this nomination?
I think he's in a good position to do that. I think, the family connections and the long history favors Jeb Bush on the pure big donor category. But in this, the fact that the recall had that period of unlimited donations gave him a chance to build a donor list outside of the state. And he's certainly gone to conferences and met with big donors in the time since. Okay. So the potential is there for that money to flow in. But there are a lot of high-quality Republican candidates out there who are plausible competitors for the nomination. And that big donor money isn't going to be locked up by most of those people, I don't think. I think they're going to look and see, because probably for most of these big donors, there's two or three or maybe even four potential nominees who they would find acceptable. And so you want to back not just an acceptable candidate, but a likely winner. That could play to Walker's advantage, But it could also mean that the large donor money is spread around a little bit more this year, perhaps, than it was in the past.
We've seen that on the other side in 2008, where we thought, well, Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. But a lot of big donors hedged their bets, especially after Obama won Iowa. And it's not that they didn't support Hillary, but they also supported, you know, then-Senator Obama. And as he started to perform better and better, he took more and more of those dollars and endorsements. And, you know, something like that is likely to happen for one of these quality candidates on the Republican side.
I'm going to ask a Homer question. Ready? What, if any, significance would do you expect Wisconsin's presidential primary, Tuesday, April 5th, to play in Scott Walker being the nominee?
It's a little late in the process. Now, the process is supposed to be pushed back a little bit this year. We'll see if states can resist the urge to jump ahead. But I think we'll be late enough that it's not implausible that the nomination is largely or completely wrapped up before we vote. If it's not, then the issue is a sitting governor of your state winning your state is not much of a signal to the rest of the world.
Okay.
And so I would say our vote is less likely to be pivotal compared to where it was, say, in 2004, where we were a pretty important vote.
Right.
I think that's right. I'd say, you know, the most likely scenario for the Wisconsin primary mattering would be if Governor Walker won it, but not by as much as expected, in a tight race with someone else, and then it would probably be a negative for him.
Okay, the final question on this scenario. Do you expect Governor Walker to get a lot of help from his fellow cheeseheads, Reince Priebus, chairman of the National Party, Paul Ryan? Are they going to be big helpers if he wins the GOP nomination?
Well, if he wins the nomination, I mean, they would be behind whoever the nominee was anyway.
Yeah, but they can push a little extra. Yes.
Well, it's a tricky issue because the positions they hold institutionally require them to stand back. And so I think during the nomination fight, there's very little that they would be expected to do or could do to overtly promote Governor Walker. Now, covertly or quietly or on the side, sure, there might be some of that. But I'd be very surprised to see either of them get directly involved in the campaign.
And we've seen egg on the face of big-time party politicians, Al Gore going with Howard Dean in 2004, and you just can't imagine the leader of a party or the former vice presidential nominee taking that kind of risk and opening themselves up to that kind of criticism within the party.
Well, closing this section then, it sounds to me that you can see scenarios under which Governor Scott Walker is the Republican presidential nominee, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's go the other way. If he's not the nominee, what will be the factors or the decisive primary or caucus that takes him out?
I will go first. It's that the stumbles that he's had on policy questions, not on gotcha questions, but at the Club for Growth, he was asked about the Export-Import Bank, about the Dodd-Frank financial regulations, and there was a third one that, like Rick Perry, I can't remember right now. Those were things that got him some criticism from conservative columnists saying, we're not sure this guy knows where he stands on things. And he's been working hard to rectify that, and it is early in the campaign. But if the impression builds that he's not really ready to talk about this wide range of issues with some specificity, that could be a real problem for him. That's an area where senators get a natural advantage because their day-to-day jobs deal with federal issues, which they're more likely to be asked about in a presidential campaign, and it puts them at least somewhat closer to foreign policy issues, maybe directly if they're on the right committee. So I think those are things that governors have trouble coming up to speed and being fully ready to go with anyway. And the stumbles here at the beginning, I think, are less about, you know, the gotcha questions, but are much more about a non-trivial number of Republican activists and commentators saying, you know, this guy doesn't seem to really be able to articulate what he's for, and now in the last week, pointing to flip-flops on synthetic fuels,
ethanol
on
right.
immigration,
yeah.
And the sudden support for a 20-week abortion ban, which is not a flip-flop for him, but it's a position that he had not taken publicly. And as recently as the Chris Wallace interview on Sunday a couple of weeks ago, had not directly answered Wallace's push to what his position
was. Before we get to Mike, so you seem to be saying the biggest reason he may not get the nomination is some of these stumbles and not any specific primary or caucus, Charles?
I'm saying that if over the next few months, when he and all the others start to show up for joint events, not quite debates yet, but joint events or even series of speeches, he needs to comfort his potential supporters, those activists that Mike's talking about, that he really does have it together on what these issues are. And he has some depth of knowledge in those things. Because if Marco Rubio is just as conservative, but much more articulate on that range of issues, that will be a big advantage. Bobby Jindal last weekend invited the press to ask him any question about any foreign policy crisis in the world. Go ahead and ask me.
Right.
That's an invitation to show that I'm ready to be conversant about these things.
And that's an invitation that Governor Scott Walker has not yet given. Mike, thanks for your patience. Scenarios that could derail, that could deny Governor Walker the GOP presidential nominee.
Yeah, agreeing with what Charles put forward, I think, you know, some other things that could stand in the way of Governor Walker are, right now, he's had that nice trend up in the polls. He's gotten a lot more national attention. People are starting to pay attention to who is this governor of Wisconsin. But Marco Rubio and, you know, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and, you know, Rick Perry maybe and Mike Huckabee and, you know, all these folks, Jeb Bush, haven't really ramped up their introduction in the way that Governor Walker has recently. And so when he's no longer flavor of the month because there's a new person out doing their new events, how well does he do? Is he able to raise a lot of money? Is he able to hold his position in the polls? If not, he gets weak before the first races. And if he performs poorly in Iowa and New Hampshire, he's not going to last much longer. And so how he does during this invisible primary time, raising money, developing and articulating how conversant he is on a panoply of issues, not just the domestic issues, not just dealing with labor unions and taxes, but dealing with foreign policy and other things presidents do, are all really important for Governor Walker. And if he can't maintain that strength and, frankly, the upward trajectory when all these other folks start running and getting their donations and airing their ads, and probably showing the abortion ad Governor Walker aired in the governor's race to Iowa primary voters on their dime, he might have some problems.
Well, what about the theory that he was smart enough to know what he didn't know? And that's why he surrounded himself with some generally regarded as pretty competent advisors, knowing that he's not up to school on some foreign policy issues and maybe domestic policy, economics, things like that, that they will take him to school and he will come out better grounded in the next few months. Is that a very real scenario? Next few months, next few days. He's in New Hampshire this weekend.
Right. Oh, I think that is the scenario. And I think his staffing up so early and in such depth with the domestic policy advisor, foreign policy advisor, as well as the campaign organizers and spokespeople and things like that, shows a campaign that's really ramping up on this. But it does take time to get comfortable and conversant on these things. And again, it's one thing to be pushed by your political opponents. It's another to be pushed by the people on your own side. Okay. And so he's got to be able to deal with that.
Okay, we're almost out of time. I know Charles knows I like this question as an academic. What will you especially be looking for in Governor Walker's presidential campaign over the next 3 or 4 or 5 months? Charles, you want to go first?
Well, I'm a real fan of rhetoric and the way politicians present themselves and talk. Governor Walker's been really successful in Wisconsin in part by only talking about the issues he wants to talk about and by minimizing the importance of any issue he doesn't want to talk about. So I don't think anybody believed he wasn't pro-life, but he didn't want to talk about that, and so he minimized that. You can believe what you want on right to work, but he didn't, you know, he consistently downplayed that issue. The transition now to a national stage seems to be part of the problem of the shift in your rhetorical style. That sort of minimization strategy and go with your strength worked very well here. But in this first 2 months, it has not worked very well on the national stage, and he's had to correct himself or amend his statements and so on. So on that part, I'll be really watching to see whether this style that has worked so successfully in the past, he now has to transition away from. Can he be comfortable with a new rhetorical style in a fairly short amount of time.
You seem to be saying, has he come to a point where his aides don't have to make calls to the same journalist clarifying what the governor said, a spur of the moment?
Never want to make that call.
Yeah. Understand. Mike?
I think that's great. And I would also, kind of a nerdy thing, but I'll be looking for how many field offices he opens up in Iowa. Is he putting together the ground game that he needs to be successful against candidates who've got some experience there? Potential candidates who at least have a familial experience there, or folks like Mike Huckabee, or if Rick Santorum happens to get back in the race. He actually won Iowa, but we didn't know it on election night. But, you know, is he building a structure that can help him perform well early, which he needs to do if his scenario is going to be getting the nomination?
Okay. This is a great discussion. I'm going to ask you to do one more thing. Go back to your oddschecker.com. It's in front of you. At this moment, which of the odds in oddschecker.com best capture Governor Walker's, the odds that Governor Walker is going to be the Republican nominee? You've got about six choices at this moment. Charles?
I'm going to go on the low end, 4-1 or so, simply because it is so incredibly hard to win the nomination, no matter how good you look this early in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure I can read this. My arms are long enough. I think it's probably 5. I'd say 5-1.
5-1. Mm-hmm. That's great. Charles Franklin, Mike Wagner, thanks for a fascinating discussion. Well, in a few months, please come back, guys, and we'll do it again.
If anybody makes money off that bet, they have to send it in to Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen.
My pleasure.